I don't know how many of you have been tracking that process in California where they're trying to develop some kind of a law so they can outlaw certain things and label it as hate speech. And I've often wondered if what we just read would be one of the things that would might go in as hate speech from the Bible, but it's actually love speech. I have here the user manual for a TV we bought a few years ago. And it's pretty, it's one of those kind of great big old flat screen jobs that hangs on the wall that they always mark down during Super Bowl week, you know, because it's like after the holidays, so they're not going to sell anymore except to some knucklehead who really, maybe his team made the Super Bowl and he wants to have all the guys over for it. So they put those big things up there on sale just before the Super Bowl. But it's interesting to me when you look in the user's manual, some of the cautions and warnings that are in there, which you have to think, okay, did somebody actually do that and then sue the company because they didn't warn them? So as I was looking through some of the ones, they make kind of sense. And then there's this one, it says, don't hang the TV up where it will get rained on. And I'm thinking, I guess not out by the barbecue. I remember that Jackie was watching a House Hunter episode, and they had a guy who had, the millionaire guy who had built a place out back with a barbecue and a big screen outside in some tropical setting, and they went to great lengths to explain that this big screen was actually, you know, three times as expensive as a normal TV because it could handle the rain. But for the rest of us, I've never met anyone who hung a TV up in a shower or outside in the rain, but that's important to know. When you get one of these guys, don't hang it up in the rain. Okay, next, here's a big one. I kind of resent this now that I'm a senior citizen. Be sure to pull the power plug out of the outlet if the TV is to remain unused, or if you are to leave the house for an extended period of time, especially when children and elderly or disabled people will be left alone in the house. I think we all know that elderly people and children never watch television. And so, but what is the TV going to do when they're around it? Evidently, when old guys walk near the TV, it explodes. I don't know what it does, but so these TVs. Okay, here's an interesting one. Accumulated dust can cause an electric shock. Dust, okay. It can cause an electric, there it is, electric shock or an electric leakage. Not quite sure what the difference is. Evidently, it can leak out on the floor, too. Electricity, just, honey, there's a pool of electricity under the, yeah, don't step in it. So, or it could cause a fire, or the power cord could generate sparks and heat by causing the insulation to deteriorate from dust. But here's where it gets really interesting. When you dust, and this is like 5 points later, unplug the power cord, because evidently it doesn't like being dusted either, and from the wall socket, and then wipe the product with a soft, dry cloth. Don't use wax. Now, I could see that. You know, when I was a kid, I was fascinated with end dust once, you know, and it's like, Mom, I want to dust. And, you know, I was spray this stuff on and just go make the book shiny. And I could see how I might have gone after a TV screen. Of course, in those days, end dust probably didn't hurt a TV screen because it was a big glass bulging square thing with the black and white. And my dad had, you did not touch the rabbit ears in my house. That was Dad's domain. You know what I'm saying? Once he got the rabbit ears just right for ABC, you don't move. In fact, when Dad was adjusting the rabbit ears and he had those little clumps of tin foil on the ends of the rabbit ears, you weren't allowed to change seats because, you know, that could do it. those of you that are young, you're not going to realize this, but olden days, back in the days of yore, TVs came and they had three knobs on them, horizontal, vertical, and contrast. And you'd have this black and white TV, and the picture would be going blip, blip, and it would just keep going up, and you would change the vertical until it stopped blipping, and you were able to freeze the picture. Sometimes it could go fuzzy stuff from side to side, and that was when you would work the other one. And then the contrast changed it from, you could turn it all the way so it would be a blackout, or all the way so it would be a whiteout, and you would play with that until you got it as good as it was going to get. And compared to today's high def, you'd probably go blind trying to watch it now, you know, because it was, and yet it was fascinating because nobody had ever been able to broadcast pictures of stuff that moved before like that. It was just wild that, and once in a while they would capture something, and because there were only like three channels and maybe a fourth local channel like Channel 2 in Denver, everybody in my generation watched the same things. And you had one radio station and you listened. All the kids in my high school listened to KIMN. Coming out of Denver, that was the rock and roll station. You know? And so we shared such a common experience that the boomers still have that today. We grew up with the same exact music, the same Beatles tunes, the same Rolling Stones, the same Deep Purple, the same Blood, Sweat, and Tears. We all listened to the same songs, and we all watched Laugh-In, and we all watched Gunsmoke, and we all watched the Leave It to Beaver, and all that kind of stuff. So you would go to school. I remember I would go to school. The Three Stooges were on just before school, and we would go to school, and we'd all be together. And one time I got in trouble in school because three of us were down at the water fountain going, ooh, ooh, doink, doink, and trying to poke each other and to do, nyah, nyah, nyah. And we were doing all that stuff, and we got sent to the principal's office for acting like the Three Stooges. And my parents wouldn't let me watch any more Three Stooges after that, before school started at least. So why am I telling you all this? Because I don't know why they have to warn us about this stuff. Was there anything else? No, no. Oh, yeah. How to clean the screen. You ready for this? Don't use wax, benzene, alcohol, thinners, insecticide, air fresheners, or lubricants. Now, I'll say this. I did know a guy who... He believed in 3-in-1 oil. It was like if there's only three things you're going to get stuck on with the desert island, one of them had to be 3-in-1 oil. Because if he got a mosquito bite, you know, if he got a cut in his arm, 3-in-1 oil. He might have cleaned the TV screen with 3-in-1 oil. Evidently, that's not good for these babies. But insecticide, you know, I can see, Martha, I'm tired of that moth hitting the screen at night. I'm going to clean the screen with Raid. And then when he hits it, that sucker's going to be dead. He's going down. I don't know. But they have all these rules for how the TV works, right? Here's the beautiful transition. God has rules for how relationships work between people. And he's the guy who built people, so he has the right to issue the instructor's manual. So if you want to operate the TV in my house, you can't use somebody else's book. You got to use their user's manual or what? It voids the warranty, right? And then if something goes wrong, you can't get a new one. This is how relationships work, and God has given us the user's manual, and we're talking about some of that today. So let's take a look first at what God has to say about marriage, okay? Here we go. Submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. So this is the beginning of it. It starts with mutual submission. We submit to each other. We become slaves to each other. We try to take care of each other in humility by submitting to each other. And then comes the biggie. Wives, submit yourselves to your own husbands as you do to the Lord, for the husband is the head of the wife, as Christ is the head of the church, his body, of which he is the Savior. Now, as the church submits to Christ, so also wives should submit to their husbands in everything. This idea is under attack today. I took a class, thanks to Lee, a guy who is no longer with us, but Lee Paulson paid my way to go take some seminary classes. So I took Introduction to Biblical Interpretation, and because he was paying for it, I knocked myself out, and I got a perfect score in the class. I was 2 points below a perfect score, but they gave me 3 points extra credit on the final because I did a rap in puppets. And so I nailed the final and got a perfect score. But they were talking about this and about counseling and using the Bible to counsel people. And they gave us an example of a guy the gal was getting beat up at home physically, and this pastor said, go back and get beat up some more. And of course we all went, oh man, that's, no, you know, there was nobody arguing for that. But then I made my comment. I said, it's too bad that some men abuse the idea of, I said the words, male headship of the family. And about a third of the class, including this younger gal who was recently married, and she and her husband were going to be missionaries, and she was helping me make my computer work so I could track with the class online while the guy was lecturing and pull up his notes and stuff. She was helping me with that, and I thought she was great. But then when I said that, she was sitting right in front of me, and she turned around like, and she gave me this look like I just stabbed her in the back, you know, with this male headship comment. And suddenly the class broke out in this discussion about, and I'm pretty, the other old guy who was sitting next to me, he wasn't saying a word. He's just, and I'm up there saying, no, this is an important concept, and it's in the Bible. And everybody's, no, that doesn't work anymore, and that's not it. And it's about women, and it's all and the women's thing and all that. And finally, this gal who was from Ethiopia stood up, and she said, I'm so glad that somebody finally mentioned male headship, because it was the downfall of male headship when the socialists came in and took over Ethiopia, the government, and the socialists wanted to raise our children to be good children of the state and take them away from the family. And the only families that survived were the families who had a strong father in place who wasn't going to put up with that and didn't allow them to take the children. But where the fathers were weak or gone, they took the children and raised them for the state. And we know that's Communist Russia constantly wanted to raise the children by the state, familyless, so that they would be good workers and citizens in the state of the USSR. So she saw value in male headship because it saved families. So she stood up for that, and it kind of silenced the room because, one, she was female, and two, she was speaking from a more powerful experience than people in America. So I got out of there and managed to finish the class, but yeah, that I was surprised. I thought in a conservative Denver seminary setting, this would be a safe topic to throw out and talk about, and I didn't realize how horrific that was going to come off. This is under attack, and even in the church. So what I want to tell you is, men need to lead their families. It's not that they want to. I don't know too many men who want to. I know a few guys who, yeah, you know, and I'm in charge. I'm running the show, and we're gonna live our lives for me. That doesn't work. That dictatorial male, blah, yeah. No, that's not what this is saying. But I get where some guys think it does say that. And it's not saying that. This is a spiritual leadership. Jesus Christ is not here in the flesh today leading this church. But he is the head of this church. It's a spiritual headship. And men have to be the spiritual leaders of their families. Because God, every time he has a group of people, He chooses a leader and he leads that group of people through his chosen leader. Ask Moses. Anytime somebody tried to supplant Moses, the earth opened up and swallowed them alive. Korah and his contemporaries may be the only guys I know of that didn't have to die in order to go to hell. The earth swallowed them up and they went to hell for opposing Moses, God's chosen leader. God chose to say, I want the man to lead. Why? I think it was part of his punishment after the fall of mankind in the garden. If you'll notice, both the man and the woman were punished for what they did wrong. What was the original sin? It was wanting to be like God and eat the apple. How many times have you heard that? That's not true. The original sin was the failure of Adam to lead, because he was right there while the snake was talking to Eve. And whether you think that's an actual happened story or whether you think that's just a parable that wasn't actual, God is telling us the same message no matter how you feel about that. The message is Adam is standing right there and he never says a word. The guy who had known God so much longer before Eve was even created, who had this much longer relationship with God than she had, who must have gone by these things and followed God's rules for a long time, and then they take the rib and they make Eve, and here's Eve, and she's talking to the serpent, and Adam says nothing. And here's the proof. Genesis 3:6, when the woman saw that the fruit of the tree was good for food and pleasing to the eye, and also desirable for gaining wisdom, she took some and ate it. She also gave some to her husband who was with her, and he ate it. He was right there. Failure to lead was the original sin. Guys, so why is it, why do guys need to lead? It goes to the end of the paragraph. However, each one of you must also love his wife as he loves himself. That's a lot of love. If you have low self-esteem and you don't love yourself much, then that tells you that you ought to have a stronger sense of self-identity than you have to go ahead and feel good about yourself so that you can love your wife more. That's another discussion. But, and the wife must love her husband back. No, didn't say that, did it? It said the wife must respect her husband. Here's what happens, and I see it a lot in the church. A gal who's very much into Jesus and just loves him and has grown up in the church, and she is in love with Jesus Christ, and she meets Mr. Wright, who visited church for the second time in his life about a year ago, and she fell in love with this guy, and as they're getting closer and closer with each other, he decides, well, you know, I think I'm going to get baptized. So he gets baptized and accepts Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior. And he's been a Christian now for all of 2 months, and they get married. And now she's grown up with Submit, right? She's grown up with, yeah, okay, get out there and be the head of the family. This is, I've only known Jesus for 2 months. I don't even know how to be the head of me yet. I don't know how to lead myself. I'm not sure what this is. Well, we've got this problem, this problem, and this problem. Go to God and get the answers. And he's going, you mean we can talk to God and he'll speak back? He didn't even know what that process is yet. And so she's going, come on, get with it. And imagine how bad it is if this guy isn't even saved. He doesn't even have the opportunity. He doesn't even have the connection to be able to hear much from God except an occasional rebuke or something or a nudge from the Holy Spirit from without. And so she's going, come on, I'm supposed to submit to your spiritual headship, but you got to lead. If you, like Norman Schwarzkopf said, if you're given the opportunity to lead, lead. And so the guy's going, I'm not sure what the... And so the gal's finally like, you know what, I'm going to have to pray to God because one of the kids is sick and they're going to heal so-and-so and help him. They got this problem in school and I'm praying for that. And she's starting to get answers now, right? But the other thing that's happening is she's going to eventually lose respect for him who's not taking his job of leadership seriously. And so the loss of respect whittles away at the marriage. It undermines, it undercuts him, because she's going to lose respect because she's got a relationship with God, and she's going to go to him and find stuff out despite her husband. And then he's undercut, and pretty soon they've got their cozy little, and they're all going to church, and he's not. And all of that kind of stuff is happening, and then he's cut off. So if she married a guy who was brand new, then she's got to be prepared to wait for him to grow into it and hope that other Christian men will get around that guy and build him up and speak into him so that he really steps into it more and more. Look, at my last job, I was working a lot in children's ministry, and I did a lot of marriages for people who had kids in children's ministry, and their kids were enjoying going, and their kids were learning stuff about Jesus, and they would start attending occasionally while their kids were in Sunday school, and then sometimes they would get convicted. You know, we've been together all this time, but we've never gotten married. The attorney general, his last name is Barr, the new attorney general for America. I think he's a pretty strong Christian from the speeches I've been reading about Barr. And he spoke at Notre Dame last spring at their graduation. And he was attorney general before in the early 1990s. And Barr said, when I was attorney general back in the early 90s, the unwed birth rate, the rate of kids in America that were being born to parents who had never gotten around to being married, was 25%. Now it's 40%. But in the inner city, it's 70%. People who aren't married. So I would meet these people. And we were in Westminster, and they would say, you know what, we've come to believe in the Lord, and we used to go as kids, but now we're wanting to take it serious. And one of the things we figured out is we need to get married. And I'd say, well, have you been saved? Yes or no, or well, let's get that done first. And then, have you been baptized? Okay. Said there was one couple, they got baptized and came up and got married right after they got baptized. It was really cool. But I warned them during counseling each time. I would look at the guy and I'd say, you don't know the weight that's getting ready to be dumped on your shoulders. Because here's what's going to happen. You've been carrying the ball equally, and it's awkward. And now it's going to be on your shoulders to be the spiritual head of your family. It's going to be your job to go to God and get the answer for your family. And she's finally off the hook trying to do half of your job for you. And three, four times, they actually would come back to me two months later, and he would say, boy, were you right. This is hard work. And she really expects me to have something going here, and I'm trying to get it, but this is hard. And she's going, this is wonderful. He's finally stepping up, and I'm not having to do this stuff for him. He's finally stepping up. And so the relief is off the gal, and it's on the guy. But what happens, she's starting to go, you know, hon, I really admire the way you're stepping up. I really respect how you're pursuing your relationship with God and starting to take over and direct the kids and speak the things that God's showing you need to happen with our family. I love that. I love that you're really jumping in and engaging, which is the opposite of Adam. Men engaging in their families with spiritual wisdom. What a concept! This could actually work. But it's getting bashed. No one's a bigger proponent of the women's movement in its infancy than me. Because my mom was the mom without a dad. My dad left. And my mom worked in public health as a nurse after she got out of the hospital. And she was stuck with the glass ceiling. She was a straight-A student and valedictorian of her class from Englewood High School. And she had both a RN degree and the other one, you know, the one that's not the college. She has the college degree nursing certificate and the non-college nursing school certificate. She had all that stuff. But they believed back there in the late 60s that women shouldn't be in charge of people. in public health. They're in Boulder. And so she was in charge of training the guys to be over her and the other gals. And if they didn't do a good job, she'd hear about it because she didn't train them well enough. But she could do their job. Of course, this was Boulder. But where were the wonderful men of the church saying this is unfair? Yeah, they weren't. So eventually my mom became the first nurse practitioner in Colorado, the first nurse to write a prescription for public health. She did finally get there after I was in college. So I was for that fairness of that movement. But when it seeks to circumvent God's plan, I'm not for it. You know? I'm not there. The guy has to be the head of the family. I remember when I learned that, and things cleared up around my house when I did. And is it awkward when a guy first starts stepping up and trying to lead and figure out? It's real awkward. And a wonderful wife will recognize that it's awkward, but he's trying. And this is how God says it needs to work. So there's mutual submission. I'm submitted to my wife as the head of our family. What? I'm submitted to my wife as the head of our family. We were talking about in the men's group. When your wife says something's not right, you better be listening. Because she's not allowed to tell you what you have to do, but she can sure say something doesn't feel right, this isn't good. If there's one spiritual gift that I think is more for women than men, it's discernment. The gift of discernment. I've often said it, used car dealers don't like my wife. She can tell when somebody's fudging, when they're lying, when it's not the truth. She can tell. She can even tell in a commercial. Of course, most of us, that's all commercials are. But and she's never once cleaned the TV screen with Raid. But the point is, when she doesn't feel right about it, there was one time when I wanted to do one thing so bad, I was praying about it constantly, and I knew what I wanted God to say. That's not a good place to be when you're asking for God's will on something. If you know what you want God to say, can you even hear him say anything else? I wanted this one job. I wanted to make a move. I was tired of doing band. I wanted to be able, and I was offered a job to be the superintendent of schools and the pastor of the local church and the band director, and they give you a house. How good is that? Guess where it was? Agate, Colorado. Anybody ever driven to Lyman? It's the last exit before you get to Lyman going out east. Agate. It's named Agate because it's actually A Gate, because it was the A Gate coming in from Lyman to Denton. There was the A Gate and the B Gate and the C Gate. About D Gate was Strasburg, and you went on in, okay? And their deer trail and all. And I would have gotten to be the pastor of a church of 12 and the superintendent / band director / custodian of the Agate public school system, all 99 kids. I had bands bigger than that. I had some bands were almost twice as big as that. But at that moment, I was so burned out in the job, and there were so many reasons why I didn't want to be in that job anymore. And this was it. And Jackie kept saying, "That just doesn't. That Casey's taking trumpet lessons. That's gone. Zach and Casey are on soccer teams. That's gone. You go out 2-hour drive east Colorado and." Everything we do as a family is gone. Yeah, but, and so they had given me the job, and I had until 3:30 that day to respond. And at 3:15, I was still on my knees begging God to give me the green light. And he just wouldn't do it. Oh, that killed me to let, that was perfect for me. Still feels pretty good. I liked what Josh said. He said, yeah, God would have blessed me in a job he was talking about, would have blessed me in the job I might have taken, but it wasn't the perfect right job that he wanted for me. You can do your testimony next week. Well, no, you can preach next week. So, but my point is, Jackie knew. She's always known. Did you ever notice how, you remember the time when Abraham and Sarah, and Abraham's 100 years old and Sarah's 90 years old, and the angels come and say to Abraham, guess what? Next year this time, you're going to have your son. She's going to get pregnant and have a son. And he's like 100 years old, right? And he's going, yeah, right, right. Like, that's going to happen now. And the angels, no big deal. Sarah over here, she hears, I'm going to be pregnant and we're going to have a kid. She also laughs, big deal. The angels are zooming in going, why are you laughing? And Sarah's going, I didn't laugh. I'm not laughing. She says, yeah, I'm pretty sure you laughed. No, not laughing. And why was that a big deal? Because your wife has to be willing to get pregnant with the promises that God has given your family. Your career, your stuff, if she's not willing to take it that personally to get pregnant. When I wanted to be a pastor, Jackie had to be willing to be a pastor's wife. That's a whole lot harder than being a pastor, because you take all the junk without all the accolades, right? I mean, it's Pastor Appreciation Month. I get cards, I get stuff. There's no church office manager appreciation month, right? And so she does all this work that makes me look good and doesn't get much accolades. And if she fusses over something around the church, then she's fussy. How fair is that? She had to be willing to take this on. And even after all the crazy years of me chasing and want to be a rock and roll and a country and western star, when I started talking about this, she knew it was right. That's why it was important that Sarah was lined up with the program here. Because if she wasn't willing, obviously Abraham's ready. Guys are always ready, right? Let's have a kid. But she had to be on board with it too. And Jackie embraced that craziness of wanting to be a pastor when I finally had a steady job as a band director. This is how it works. God says so. It's in his manual for users. One other thing, guys. This also has stuff about children obey your parents, and slaves obey your earthly masters. What? Slaves? Go back and be good slaves? In America, that's all wrong, right? That's all wrong. But slavery was different then. Slavery was, you can't pay your bills, so you say, I'm going to work out a deal with this guy. My family's going to move into his household. We're going to serve him for the next 4 years. He's going to pay our debts. And then if you liked it, you could make it a permanent setting. We're just going to stay and keep working for this guy. So slavery was kind of a forced choice. When you couldn't pay your bills and feed your family, then you could enslave yourselves to a guy who would take care of you, a landowner, wealthy person. That's what slavery was when this was written by Paul, at least for Jews. And they were supposed to set them all free every 7 years. That's not slavery in America, so we don't want to confuse it with that. But there's something here that teaches us to work with the authority God has placed over us. And there's the wisdom. To work with authority, whether it's the parent or whether it's the slave, the employee, the student, whatever it is, God places us under multiple layers of authority, and the wise person does that. They cooperate with authority. They try to make it work with authority, even when authority gets out of line. Now, if authority's telling you to go against God, then we respectfully decline. Remember how respectful Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were when they say, oh, great and glorious king, we're not going to bow down to you, but we honor you, O king, and we'll walk into the fire now and get killed. But they respectfully submitted to his punishment. They didn't call him names. I wrote these two letters. How do I know if he's the one? How do I know if she's the one? They were popular when I was at New Life Church. online, they got a lot of hits. 7 questions. I won't read you the whole 5-page letter, but it's available to you. Jackie has copies. I made her do all the work. She copied. So, but these are the questions for a gal. How do I know if he's the one? 1, does he walk with God in a strong enough relationship so that you know you can trust him to get direction from God for both of you? There's a question we don't teach too much in dating seminars, but that's what young gals need to be looking for. I told Zach, I want to go in and teach this. I want every gal and every guy to have an idea of what God wants them to be looking for. 2, do you know what God has called him to do with his life, and are you willing to bring life to his calling? Doesn't mean you can't have a career. That may well be part of God's plan, but they've got to fit together, or it's going to break you apart. This is what makes for a good marriage. Now that you know his calling, 3, in what ways are you prepared by God to support and add to the future you will share with him? Can he see and appreciate the good things that you bring to this calling? Or is he just going to do it all by himself and ignore you? That's not good. 4, so far we've talked about his relationship with God, but how does he do with self-control? Why do gals always get attracted to bad boys? You know, the rebel without a cause and all that kind of stuff. I want to tell gals, don't get attracted to the bad boy. Get attracted to the guy who has integrity, who stands for something good and solid, and who walks it out in his life. That's the guy, not the guy who's always getting away with stuff and teasing the teacher and slipping stuff and hiding and sneaking and, oh yeah, he's dangerous, he's cool, he's all that. You see, he'll be just that way with you. Sneaking stuff. 5, is he even-handed and fair? Does he take time to consider your thoughts and needs? 6, does he protect your reputation, your heart, and your physical safety? And finally, does he cooperate with and honor authorities over him, his family, his job, his church, his government? Is he cooperating in those areas? Because if you're going to marry a rebel, you're not marrying someone who's going to walk in a biblical manner. There are times when men have to stand up and say, this is wrong and I'm going to oppose it. And there are strong ways of doing that appropriately. But a guy who just wants to rebel against all authority, means he doesn't know how to be an authority. So he can't be an authority over you because all he knows is to oppose it. So he's never going to accept that. He's never going to accept that yoke of leadership. Whew. I have one from the guy's perspective too, but it's the same points. Finally, it says, don't exasperate your children. Bring them up in the training instruction of the Lord. I leave you with this poem, and then we'll proceed to the Lord's table. I tried to teach my child with books. He only gave me puzzled looks. I tried to teach my child with words. They bounced around often unheard. I tried to teach my child with pain. At best, I saw minimal gain. I tried to teach my child with work, to do his day and not to shirk. How can I teach, Lord? Help me see. My son said, Dad, come play with me. Great parents are still ill-equipped until they have relationship. That's how you don't frustrate your children, dads. Play with them. They love it. They crave it. But there'll come a day when they won't anymore. You'll be glad you did. Amen? Our Father in heaven has provided in his Son, who is the head of the church, and we are all under his authority here, a means by which we can remember the price he paid so that we can have salvation as the gift of God. So I'd like to ask the ushers to gather in the back as we approach his table.